We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. And as always, my name is Matt Harvey and I will be your host and the suppository of all wisdom. So this episode is brought to you by Antarctica Day. Yes, recognised on December 1st, it celebrates the anniversary of the Antarctic Treaty. The treaty dictates, among other things, that Antarctica, like the moon, shall be used exclusively for peaceful purposes. So military activities such as the establishment of military bases or weapons testing are specifically prohibited. And nuclear explosions are also prohibited, as well as the disposal of radioactive waste. See, we were good. We caught ourselves early on that one because we just knew that if we were allowed to, we would dump it all there. Which is why they stored the frozen remains of King Ghidorah there. And, of course, the Fortress of Solitude. It's practically the moon. It's only ever occupied by basically scientists, or the extremely rich will be the first ones to be able to get there outside of scientists. That's it. And that's why we send all of our alien life forms there. It's sort of like a Guantanamo Bay for things that we couldn't possibly defeat on our own. As climate change ravages the temperatures of the planet and Antarctica melts, we are getting ever closer to the real danger of climate change, releasing the frozen corpse of Ghidorah to attack the planet. How will we live a peaceful life in the Mad Max desert wasteland if we have to concern ourselves with kaiju attacks all the time? This episode is also brought to you by the 2023 International Anti-Corruption Day. This December 9th, the UN is seeking to highlight the crucial link between anti-corruption and peace by allowing society to slide into the deeper depths of depravity as it fails to do anything about either of those things. Look, guys, honestly, sometimes to be reminded of how bad things are, we need a grand gesture rather than like a series of small probing botherings. Piles. Don't forget piles. Humanity needs piles in order to be reminded of anything. We are only ever impressed by the scale. Dinosaurs, impressive because of their scale. Rats, impressive because there are lots of them. Piles, guys, we need piles. Documentaries have taught us to praise piles. We didn't care about climate change until we saw a large chunk of the Antarctic ice shelf fall into the sea. Piles of ice. So, the UN is addressing humanity the way that we need to be addressed, with piles. In this case, it is piles of human atrocities. And of course, we are brought to you by my upcoming 2024 Australian tour, starting on January 19th in Rockingham for the Rockingham Fringe, which is also part of the Perth Fringe World Festival, technically, so you can get tickets through the Fringe World Festival, and then I'll come back later and do Perth Central and for about a week. And I'll be moving on to Adelaide, and I've got the Melbourne International Comedy Festival locked in, and I'll be looking to unlock festivals all across Australia, hopefully somewhere near you. So if you enjoyed this podcast and you know of a Fringe Festival near you, feel free to hit me up. I don't actually know all of the Fringes, and I will do my best to get out to you. Until then, though, guys, I will be the bearer of weird news. So we're going to move on now to the headlines. DoorDash has added a pop-up in its app warning customers that orders with no tip might take longer to get delivered and might even be cold when they arrive. Seems DoorDash has found a new way to rush to the bottom of the capitalist barrel. Why pay your staff to do their job in a timely manner with everybody when you can make everyone hate your service by price gouging them or delivering cold food? What better way to say we don't really want your business anymore, than by turning the whole experience into a hostage situation. We sure hope you didn't order rice. It'll solidify into a solid mass of dinner time sadness. You'll be better off using as a doorstop than eating as a dinner. DoorDash! Because we don't really care. Anthony Albanese has had a historic meeting with Chinese leader Xi Jinping, reopening dormant communications between the estranged countries. Like, sort of like a divorced couple at a kid's birthday party. They discussed stabilizing the relationship with China, and so Albanese can learn new methods of keeping people in inhumane detention without losing any votes. It's an important skill if you're going to run this country. A man known as the Somerset Gimp has been banned from gimping for 5 years. For those pretending that they don't know what gimping is, well, he dressed in all black in a gimp suit in public at night and sort of crawled and wriggled or writhing on the ground. It's like that one scene out of Pulp Fiction, but like outdoors, you know? When asked to comment on the matter, the Somerset Gimp simply said, "Gimping ain't easy." A Connecticut man has been charged with allegedly impersonating a police officer after he was found to have police lights inside his Dodge Challenger so that he could get to work faster. Guys, who wants to be at work early? I wake up early every day hoping that Extinction Rebellion have held up all the trams in the city so that I have a legitimate reason to not be on time, and I'm self-employed. Just between us, my boss can be a bit of a jerk. Breaking shocking news! Guys, don't panic, don't panic, don't do it. I know you can be a little bit jumpy when things get too ironic in here, and we are cranking up the irony meter to full. The Dutch Headwind Cycling Championships were cancelled, say it with me now, because it was too windy. That's right, someone get a Lars Morissette to safety. I believe she's currently being given a free ride after she's already paid. According to a new analysis of data from the National Notifiable Diseases Surveillance System, chlamydia and gonorrhea infections have surged 24% in Australia from 2021 to 2023, 67% of which has been between the ages of 15 to 29, leading experts to call for improvements in education and public awareness. And they say that the younger generation aren't having that much sex. I think we'll find they're getting down. Gen Z replied by saying, "Education and public awareness isn't the problem. More young people are raw dogging because fuck it, chlamydia can't kill me, but the climate change will." That story again, STI rates are rising in Australia as the country gets increasingly fucked. The ACT Greens backbencher Jonathan Davis will resign from the party and the parliament after he was stood down over misconduct allegations. Upon hearing the news, coalition party members were genuinely confused why the Greens would stand down a member of the party over something like a sex scandal. It's not even a robo-debt. Come on, guys. Get your shit together. They went on to explain that it was good to see the Greens acting like a proper political party, even if they did it wrong, saying, "Look, we'd have made him head of the party the next day, but you do you, Greens. You do you." At a right-wing political forum, former PM and man who's only ever done one good thing, John Howard, has declared that he always had trouble with the concept of multiculturalism because immigrants should be expected to adopt the values and practices of the country that they move to, which is why you'll notice white Australia isn't a concept. Because we immediately adopted the values and practices of the country that we moved to, integrating seamlessly into the Indigenous culture. So there was no need to create any sort of white Australia, nor any sort of policy regarding a white Australia. It's just respectful, guys, come on. Seems Howard has left his openly curmudgeon phase and finally turned old enough to go full hats off racist in public without anyone thinking that he should know or act better. It's an age-old tradition. Why would you mess with tradition? South Australian Health says a cruise liner bound for Adelaide from Queensland is dealing with outbreaks of both COVID-19 and gastroenteritis, prompting people to ask the obvious question, why are people still getting on these floating petri dishes, these floating retirement homes of despair? At no point has entering a cruise ship not been just a giant game of diarrhea roulette. But now, you might get COVID and die as well. At least, the loss of smell will help after the diarrhea outbreak sets in all over the ship. Shakira has reached a settlement with prosecutors in order to avoid a trial in Barcelona after failing to pay 14.5 million euros in Spanish income tax between 2012 and 2014. Shakira may have avoided jail for tax fraud, but her hips will be charged with concealing a serious offence and lying through song. The judge in the Shakira case said to ordinary people looking on at this debacle, look, half of what she owes is more than these types normally pay, so we're going to count this as a win. Can we just not make this a whole big thing and take the W? But upon hearing this, Spanish citizens are now thrilled to learn of the precedent called Shakira's Law, meaning that they won't go to jail if they only pay half of the tax that they're supposed to. Win-win. Win-win for everyone. Irresponsible owners of dogs who cause serious harm or death could face up to 3 years in jail or $108,000 in fines under proposed law changes introduced to Queensland Parliament. The changes will also include a ban on 5 restricted breeds, such as the American Pit Bull Terrier. However, the Queensland dog breed ban does fail to ban the most problematic dog of all, the racist dog. Artist Stuart Semple, the creator of The Blackest Black, which was a response to an exclusivity deal limiting access to Vanta Black, has reportedly improved on his quest to invent the blackest black with Black 4.0, which absorbs 99.96% of visible light. Suddenly, millennials have entered the chat. Cracking their knuckles in preparation for a proper retort. Oh, you think you have the blackest black? Sure, 99.96% is impressive, but as a Gen Xer, I don't think that you know what the blackest black truly is. Get ready to be schooled. Try being a generation who is a mix of being raised by baby boomers and Gen Xers. We were either silently shut down and ignored with the kind of repressed boys don't cry attitude of a Clint Eastwood type doing a speech for the NRA, or it was the loosey-goosey participation trophy for which we would then be mercilessly mocked for taking, despite the fact that we were literal children at the time of receiving them. Then, guys, then the boomers took all of the properties, drove up the cost of the rent while driving down the effectiveness of the dollar, gaslit us into thinking that it was our fault that we couldn't get ahead in life, while simultaneously undermining our every attempt to do so by not only destroying the economy for the poor, but refusing to retire or make any sort of space in the corporate world. Not to mention that the boomers, they all got free education, and once they got smart enough to get a good job, actually stopped giving that out, forcing the rest of us into debt in order to get those very same jobs that would be able to pay the skyrocketing rent that they foisted onto us so that they won't have to work, and yet still didn't leave the workforce and make some room for the rest of us. All this while destroying the environment so that the world has entered into a permanent state of ecological chaotic neutral, and defunding the science that would potentially make it all better so that you could make some money selling us the means of our own destruction. So no, I think you can go a little blacker than that, champ. Try looking into the space where a boomer's heart should be, or where my mental health is supposed to live. Those seem to be the current contenders for the blackest black. The Canadian federal government has hired KPMG consultants at a cost of $669,650 for advice on how to save money on consultants. This is like joining a weight loss program and getting a complimentary bag of donuts. I assume that this is because their budget for common sense ran out a long time ago. Oh, Canada, where the government spends over $500 million to learn how to tighten its belt. I mean, I can think of one thing. Just Google how to save money for free. KPMG followed through with a 90-page report that just said, stop spending money on reports over and over and over and over again, and yet still nobody's going to follow through. That's the end of the headlines, guys. We're going to move on now to the bigger news, starting with climate crisis news. The climate crisis. It's still happening, guys. Yeah, it's still here. It's the only thing that you are able to get more of despite the ongoing cost of living crisis. It is our constant. As Australia prepares to enter its first El Nino summer in 4 years, we are preparing for the onslaught of a particularly burny days and nights ahead of us. After it was announced that Australia's third warmest September since records began in 1900 had just happened. And according to a report by Climate Central, the past 12 months on Earth were the hottest ever on record. Do you hear that? The hottest ever on record. The average global temperature was 1.3 degrees centigrade higher than the pre-industrial climate, which scientists gently reminded us is close to the limit that countries have agreed to not go over in the Paris Agreement. Do you remember that? Do you remember the Paris Agreement, that thing that we said that we would all stick to? I mean, it was non-binding, but we said that we would do it. The 1.5 degree centigrade rise that we weren't supposed to go over, that agreement that we definitely signed on to, how are we doing on that? Hey? How are we doing on that? Have we actually done anything? Well, public concern over the government's actions on climate change has fallen, and while 31% of Australians now believe they are doing too little, that's down from 44% when Morrison was in power. Okay, so we have achieved some climate-related reductions, and that's good. That's a great thing. A government that keeps its promises is a government that stays in power. Wait, no, hang on, that doesn't sound right. No. A government that lies about keeping its promises, that's a government that stays in power. Got it? Yep, silly me, really. Very silly. So, our new climate reduction target of 43% by 2030 is up from 26 to 28%. It is not enough to meet the Paris Agreement goal of limiting warming by 1.5 degrees centigrade. So that's a start. That's a very good start. Lying about climate change, that was a cornerstone of the Morrison government. Maybe that is the start of a decade-long run by Labour. We seem to love to be lied to, so we're really drawn to it. Critics are chiefly concerned that the government has refused to outlaw new coal, oil, and gas projects. Remember, Australia is one of the world's biggest fossil fuel exporters. And if you ask the government, that is not enough. We need to be number one, baby! Number one. We're going to build more coal mines, and we are on the way, as the Australian government has already greenlit 3 new coal mine projects. Higher, further, hotter, baby. Yeah! The IPCC says new fossil fuel projects are not compatible with the aims of the Paris Agreement. And in fact, existing infrastructure must be urgently phased out. But then we won't be number one, baby! We won't be number one, so let's not do that. Okay, let's just pull the brakes on that a little bit. Pump the brakes. We are the musicians playing as the Titanic sinks, if the playing of their music was the thing that was causing the boat to sink in the first place. I believe that's how that works. And everyone was desperately trying to get them to stop, but they just kept doing it as they saw it as their sworn duty to continue to play. Yeah, that feels about right. And given Australia is one of the sunniest and windiest countries in the world, and is, as the anthem does remind us, goodbye sea, which could be used for hydroelectric power. That second bit is from the unabridged anthem and was cut by Menzies when he took power because he wasn't gonna abide this woke nonsense. In many ways, a man ahead of his time, who would lay the foundation for his party for decades to come. But currently, only about 30% of Australia's electricity comes from renewable sources, and 10% of that is wind power generated by all the blowhards at Sky News, am I right? Got them. They'd be furious if they knew that they were helping the renewable energy cause, so let's just keep that between us, eh? Got them. This is significantly lower than the UK, which is actually disappointing, as the UK hasn't seen the sun since the Romans came in the 4th century and replaced Sulius, the Celtic sun god, with Jesus, which is what caused him to turn so white. He spent too long hanging out in the British Isles and all of that lack of sun. Climate scientist and Columbia University's Jason Smeardon said no one should be caught off guard. It's like being on an escalator and being surprised that you're going up, which is just a great quote. Isn't he just, like, he isn't just a scientist, he's a sassy scientist doing his best Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. I have to assume I've never heard him speak. And when it does come to Australia improving its standards on climate change, he had this to say.
Must go faster.
And that is very good advice, my friends, that's very good advice. Australia's offer of climate migration to Tuvalu residents is groundbreaking and could be a lifeline across the Pacific. So what are we going to do between now and our stated date of net zero, which is 2050? 28 years is a long time to let the world slow broil and take no action. Well, we've made it clear that we won't stop digging up and selling coal, so we need to do something else. Do we have any suggestions? Anybody? Ah, perfect. Yes, there it is. While Albo was in Tuvalu for the Pacific Islands Forum, he signed this groundbreaking treaty with Tuvalu to offer citizens the chance to build lives in Australia. And upon hearing this news, Indigenous Australians were pissed, exclaiming, "Oh, so you do know how to sign a treaty. Well, what the fuck does the population need to do to get a treaty signed around here?" So, what's the deets of this treats? Australia will take in 282 Tuvaluans a year, allowing them access to a special visa. That does seem like a very good deal. Let's see, we're some quick maths here. We're aiming for a 2050 net zero. Okay. So what's the population of Tuvalu? It is roughly 11,204. Okay, so that's not a huge amount of people. It's not a huge amount. So, all right, we've got 11,204 divided by 280 people a year. Okay, so it'll take 40.1 years to get the whole population from Tuvalu to Australia. And that's assuming that they don't have a single new baby in the next 40 years. How long did we say it was until 2050? Does anyone remember? How long did we... 28 years. That's right, 28 years. Very good, guys. So, 280 people a year times by 28 years, that's actually 7,840 people. So we're only leaving 3,364 people to drown. That's pretty good, right? Not to drown. We are leaving them to enjoy the lifestyle benefits of the increasingly popular sea-submerged community. Yeah, I can't use strong language like drowning. Understand now why we are investing so much in submarines. We're going to need them to get all the Pacific Islanders that we left behind. So by 2050, half the capital city will be submerged underwater, so people living in the capital will get the benefits of city living and beachfront property. So if anything, we're driving the cost of their property right up, and they should be thanking us. And as one of the world's biggest polluters per head of population, offering refuge at a rate too slow to save the population is the least that we could do. No, literally, it is the least that we could do. Not everyone is, of course, on board with the offer. The next most vulnerable island and alternative dimension, Tuvalu, Kiribati, has gone down a different road, with the Kiribati president, Taneti Amamu, being reluctant to make a similar deal with Australia, and I can't say that I blame them really, because aside from giving Tuvaluan citizens priority access, it also gives Australia effective veto power over the new security agreements struck by the Pacific Island nation. So we are subtly shoring up our power in the Pacific by the use of our most powerful weapon, weaponized ignorance on a global scale. You think it's bad when your partner pretends that they don't know how to do a thing, so they make you do it? Imagine that your partner instead was like a neighboring island with a coal mine in his backyard that is belching smoke so high that it blocks out your ability to see the sun, or some other better metaphor. Mamu struck a non-committal tone when he asked if he'd be open to a similar pact with Australia, telling the ABC, "I think we have our own way of doing things. Maybe, but we have our own strategies and our own initiatives. Australia hasn't approached us on that yet." Ooh, solid burn there. Just leaving it dangling out there, letting us make the first move. Being very coquettish. Yeah, look, champ, here's the thing. We don't really do the whole listening to native people about how they do things thing. We prefer the steamroller approach. I mean, it's like you haven't heard of Australia before. Do you even know who we are? Do you know who our culture is? So not only is the security arrangement an important part of the deal, but to be honest, the Australian Academy of Science has forecast that even under the 1.5 degrees of warming, the Great Barrier Reef would shrink by 70 to 90%. And the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change found droughts would become more frequent and intense under 2 degrees of warming, while limiting the temperature rise to 1.5 degrees would actually mean that 50% fewer people around the world would suffer water shortages. So they could come and live here, but there isn't going to be much left of here for them when they do arrive. We'd be well into entering our Mad Max era by then. Sure, maybe they can get jobs selling concessions at the Thunderdome. Corn is a drought-tolerant vegetable, so we can still have popcorn to sell, so that's a plus. But is anybody in Australia doing the right thing? I think that's a fair question at this point. As usual, it falls on the youth to at least try to do something. And to be fair, this whole climate apocalypse thing will be their problem, mostly. And as a result, thousands of school children across Australia took to the street to strike for climate action again. The march was on a Friday, which is nice because then they get to make a stand for the right side of history, but they also get a long weekend, which is kind of fun. We love a good long weekend, don't we? That's why the Monday before Melbourne Cup is an unofficial day off for a lot of people. We just want a really long weekend. To help the kids out, two Australian climate scientists have written a climate doctor's certificate that students can present to their teachers and exchange it for a solid talking down to and maybe a day or two in detention. But at least detention has air conditioning, which will likely be better than the surrounding environment on the planet Earth, which is currently undergoing the hottest 12 months in recorded history. Remember when I said that earlier? The interactive letter, signed by Professor David Caroley from the University of Melbourne and Dr. Nick Abel from ANU, states that the student is unfit for school due to major climate health concern, noting their elevated stress and feelings of despair on seeing the impacts of climate change, and it is their recommendation that they take a sick day to protest for a sick planet. Opening the floodgates for what kind of doctor can write a sick note for school absences, and I am all for this. As all degrees offer doctorates, if you are willing to commit to them long enough. So the letter given by these climate doctors is exactly the kind of sick note that you'd expect from a climate doctor. Clinical, boring, it's all a little tongue-in-cheek, and it is no fun at all. I want more elaborate and fun doctor's notes. Something like this note given from a doctor of philosophy. In my esteemed professional opinion, Charles' name, irrelevant in the grand scheme of life, requires immediate exemption from the intellectually strenuous environment you call school due to an acute sense of solipsism, leading to believing nothing exists, and even if something does exist, nothing can be known about it, severely undermining the purpose of your institution. Given the gravity of this condition, I am left with no choice but to prescribe an immediate break from the educational environment. Exposure to traditional learning may exasperate his, her, or their symptoms, leading to further existential crises and an increased likelihood of engaging in lengthy, one-sided philosophical debates with unsuspecting teachers and classmates, should they be deemed to exist at all. I kindly request they be excused from school until their perspective on reality stabilizes or they come to terms with being all that can be known in the universe. I believe a combination of introspective contemplation and binge-watching documentaries on the nature of existence will be the most effective course of treatment. Please do not hesitate to contact me if you have any questions like what, who, when, or even the elusive why. May the pursuit of knowledge be ever in your favor. Yours, in theory, Dr. Pecan Side. Moving on now, it is refugee detention news! Refugees, Australia's eternal unexpected enemy. In a landmark decision, the High Court has determined that indefinite immigration detention is now unlawful, overturning a 20-year-old precedent. A decision that has very much taken the government by surprise as we solve most of the country's problems with indefinite detention. We give out more detention than the evil teacher in an 80s teen comedy. Refugees fleeing a land you're bombing? You've got detention, mister. Pesky children looking for a new home? You better believe you've got detention, mister. World famous athletes? We'll give you citizenship, but that's after you go straight to detention. This decision stems from the case of a stateless Rohingya man known as X Ash A12 Musk. Oh, sorry. Whoops. That's actually Elon Musk's son's name. So this guy was known as NZYQ. That's it, NZYQ. I always mix those two up. NZYQ faced lifelong detention due to the lack of a country willing to resettle him. And as he'd been detained when there was no real prospect of his removal from Australia becoming practicable in the reasonably foreseeable future, his detention was deemed unlawful. A phrase the Australian government has become increasingly familiar with after a series of policy decisions increasingly using logic pulled straight from the proverb, it is better to act decisively and apologise for it later than to seek approval to act and risk a delay. Or, as they have amended it, it's better to act now and refuse to apologise later than to bother seeing if anything is legal at all. Who knows how long it'll be able to go on for. People might not even catch on at all. The Home Affairs Department was concerned the results would trigger the immediate release of 92 people who also cannot be returned to their country of origin, including refugees and stateless persons, with the detention of a wider cohort of 340 people in long-term detention also in doubt. All but nine of the 92 people likely to be affected by the ruling were in immigration detention because of character concerns related to national security, cybercrime, serious and high-profile organized/gang-related high-ranking outlaw motorcycle gangs members. A fact the coalition has seized on to argue that the government must mitigate against the risk of their release. Although they conveniently forgot that five of the 93 people affected by this decision had already been released into the community detention by the coalition, at least according to Home Affairs documents. But this isn't the first time that the Coalition has been responsible for releasing problematic individuals. Upon the "how are you not suspecting by now, they've shown you time and again who they are, why are you still voting for them?" Australian public. Including, let's see, there is racists, those who punish the poor, terrible economic managers, corrupt criminals, money launderers, warmongers, climate change deniers, climate change aggravators, coal mongers, endangered animal murderers, refugee internment instigators, alleged rapists, Tony Abbotts, and worst of all, a former Queensland cop. A very problematic collection of cunts, if ever there was one, to be released upon the Australian public. Labor promptly went into panic mode that their hard work had been undone and rushed through emergency legislation to deal with the fallout of the High Court's decision. So after seemingly indefinite detention, what are we now doing to those people who, while some of them have committed crimes, and some are pretty heinous crimes, not all of them had convictions in Australia, and many had already served their terms for the crimes, and 21 of which were already on residence determinations, meaning that they're permitted to live at a specified residence in the community. Oh, looky here. It's another unlawful ruling, just waiting to happen. It's more of that act now, consequences later behaviour, as we have determined that some of these detainees will have to wear ankle bracelets, follow curfews, and report their location to police. The breaking of these conditions will, of course, be a criminal offence, with each breach leading up to 5 years in jail, because if you can't detain them, arrest them. They'll be forced to tell the government of any new links to or memberships of clubs and organisations, or if they've changed addresses. So basically, these guys have been put on some form of mutual obligations. It's like they've been put on Centrelink, but like on hard mode, but they don't even get not enough money to survive. They just get to hang around in the community. This level of control orders is highly restrictive and highly controversial, as it is usually reserved for convicted terror offenders set to be released, and those who have trained with listed terror groups overseas. So if you want to get away with that kind of thing, you need to train with a local group, like One Nation, right? Your behavior will slide, it will not be a problem. You might even get a job in Parliament. Don't worry that the leader is currently on an anti-Semitic turn. She will have a change of target before long. Maybe the Asians will do something to piss her off again, and then she'll turn on them. Who knows? And it's already begun, much faster than usual, which is a nice change of pace, as a Chinese refugee known as X-A12 Musk. He is known as S151. He is seeking a declaration that the curfew to stay at his home address from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. and the requirement that he wear an ankle bracelet for electronic tracking at all times are inherently punitive in nature, exceeding Parliament's authority and breaching the separation of powers. Although S151's lawyer has said these new laws are a bigger reach than a T-Rex attempting to play a baby piano. And those of you who are afraid that the news that the defeat of the indefinite detention will lead to an influx of refugees, it's not like this is opening the floodgates or anything like that. You can calm down. Firstly, Labor tried to prevent the release of the 92 indefinite detainees by trading the freedom of one rapist, according to The Guardian. And on top of that, the Australian government's much maligned Operation Sovereign Borders policy continues to deliver more sea-based horror than Jaws or a movie marathon of Waterworld and The Meg. Under the Albanese government, within its first 9 months in office, they have seen roughly 200 people, including 14 children, all being sent back. And by doing so, inadvertently allowed for the continuation of the principles behind the worst government slogan since "Where the bloody hell are you?" Stop the boats! the politically acceptable version of fuck off, we're full. While I don't agree with the approach and feel that we could be somewhat less ghoulish, closed-minded and heartless, as an Australian it is important to remember what unexpected visitors have actually done to this country. Rabbits and cane toads have caused both a deliciousness and toxicity to run rampant through the native population respectively. And the original refugees, the original boat people, colonial prisoners who came over here and had, to put it mildly, quite a devastating impact on the local ecological makeup, causing a near total loss of, for lack of a better term, nearly all local flora and fauna, nowadays known as native populations. You have to assume they're projecting a little when they worry that these new refugees will treat the country the same way that we treated the country when we arrived, as it is a terrible way to treat a people and a culture. Seems we haven't entirely missed the lessons of history, we just refuse to acknowledge them out loud, or refuse to acknowledge that we did them. It's more of a read between the lines scenario than anything else. Moving on now, it is Centrelink news! Centrelink, equal parts the last desperate lifeline and the scourge of the poor. It's the instant noodles of government departments. You only turn to them when you really, desperately need them and have absolutely no money. Centrelink has been making a lot of news lately, and that's never good. It's never, Centrelink runs perfectly and everyone is having an okay time, which would ironically actually be newsworthy. Centrelink has really Centrelinked things up. What has Centrelink been up to? Well, what kind of fuckery can we expect? Is it going to be bad? Oh, it is so bad. So very bad. See, it appears there are more troublesome debts than we originally suspected. Set your faces to not at all stunned. Right, so what's the deal? See here, Services Australia has been forced to pause debt repayments for 86,000 people over concerns the welfare debts may be unlawful. Again, this isn't even robo-debt. This is a whole different bunch of problematic debts. Are you fucking kidding me, Centrelink? Why are we still doing this? Okay, if it makes you feel any better, and it certainly didn't me, we have been assured that these aren't robo-debt debts. There were no robots involved. This is purely human error. Humans screwing over other humans. That is the human way. It's good to know that we're as capable of being as destructive to ourselves as the robots might be. Never doubt the power of humans to destroy. So that's robots one, humans one, two, if you count the environment. Robots one, humans two. We're winning. We're winning, robots. Now, back in August, the Commonwealth Ombudsman revealed that up to 100,000 debts or potential debts or potential lawsuits, if you follow my meaning, were incorrectly calculated over the two decades, dating back all the way to 2003 by unlawfully appropriating welfare recipients' income. And that might sound familiar to you, oh faithful listener. Income appropriating differs from robo-debt in that robo-debt used a specific program that automatically generated debts against welfare recipients based on ATO data and income averaging, whereas this is all us, baby! No automation necessary. We can fuck up all on our own! Under this administrative practice, bureaucrats used payment accounts, accumulated over, for example, several months' work, and attempted to fit them into fortnightly blocks. In some cases, the payslips relied on by Services Australia to calculate welfare debts didn't align with the fortnightly income reporting periods. In these situations, the agency created a daily average. So it all boils down to the same mathematical concept, averaging. seems the Australian government has the same nemesis as so many grade 6 students. Simple maths. No wonder we're struggling so much. Maths is at the core of a lot of government work. Climate change, that's environmental maths. Refugees, that's racism maths. And the continuation of coal is inertia. So that's kind of like environment physics, which is advanced maths. So that's like double maths. No wonder we messed this all up. Makes a lot of sense now. None of this had a legislative basis, by the way. You probably have guessed. And it could have. It actually could have. Centrelink could have changed the legislation to allow this dodgy accounting practice. But they didn't. But I bet they do very soon. Oh, you can see this coming. You don't get struck twice by this sort of accounting maths problem and not follow up hard. But they could have done it, and they didn't. Which is actually, I think, Centrelink's slogan. Yeah, we could have done it, but we didn't. Oh, unless it's cutting you off. They definitely did that. They'll get right on top of that. Now, as sure as the sun will rise, as sure as death and taxes, as sure as the government pay rise passing in the House. Imagine having the power to turn your actions into not a crime, but being too cocky to not follow through. Who are you? Donald Trump? I mean, legitimately, he could have declassified those documents at any time, any given moment, but he didn't do it. He was just like, how cool is this? Secret documents. I'm gonna show them off at parties and put them in my bathroom. What the hell? What is going on? Now, this wasn't just legislatively dodgy. It also breached the Social Security Act due to an incorrect but genuinely held understanding of the law. Wow. 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 Just wow. I did not realize ignorance of the law is now an acceptable excuse. This is gonna change so much. It's gonna change a lot of what we understand about the law. Is this why American politicians are so desperate to stop anyone from learning? They're getting a head start on this, like, ignorance excuse. Oh, that is deviously clever. The more educated you are, the more susceptible to the law you are. Now that is how you stop someone from going to university. Fucking genius. In August, Guardian Australia reported that prosecutors had paused 32 criminal cases and are investigating possible wrongful convictions due to Services Australia's misunderstanding about the lawfulness of income appropriatement. People were going to go to jail because of all of this. And still might. They've been sitting in jail like, oh, what are you in for? Murder, you? Crimes against averaging. Ooh, stay away from us. Crimes against maths? Crimes against averaging? Can't have it. At least in prison, they won't have to call Centrelink. You'll spend longer on hold trying to get to them than any sentence you'll ever been given. Now, given our country's recent penchant for extended punishment, that might end up being the punishment. They'll make you make phone calls for other Centrelink recipients. The Robodebt Royal Commissioner and People's Champion Catherine Holmes noted in her final report that where legal avenues were constrained, people affected by defective administrative decisions could be eligible for payments from a Commonwealth scheme for those who had suffered detriment from such decisions. I think we are owed much more than that. This is the second time that we've been screwed by the exact same Kafka-esque cacophony of fuckery explicitly designed to make you feel like a leech sucking from the teat of the hard-done-by government, daring to need in a moment of hardship. We are owed more than compensation. A lot of us have now been punished for two crimes that we didn't commit. Well, we've done the time, so now we get to do a crime. It's biased choice, by the way. We've got two minor get out of punishment free cards. One major get out of punishment free pass. However, I will, some caveats, no murder, no sex crimes. We have to have our limits. I know they don't have their limits, but we have to have our limits. It's a mini purge for some. But again, no murder, no sex crimes. I advise that you all engage in some kind of white collar crime, maybe rob a casino. Nobody's allowed to stop you. Something that will get you out of needing to go back on Centrelink, as like that's what they've wanted all along. They want to get you off the system. Great. This way we're going to get off the system. Plus, it'll get you out of attending questionable job seeker classes. Oh yeah, we haven't forgot about those. What they call a resilience training course, where you'll be shown pictures of Brad Pitt in a chicken suit to illustrate how people can go from nothing to something. Like, that isn't completely fucking condescending. The kind of condescending class run by Wise Employment, which they claim was designed to use behavioural science to help job seekers find work. It's the kind of behavioural science that was perfected at the Goebbels School of Discovering the Limits of Human Endurance. It's an introductory course to trick you into signing up. Then the real stuff begins, you understand? Then the real stuff begins. And it's not just me. Jay Coonan, who works in the policy development and research for the Anti-Poverty Center, describes the courses as social eugenics, saying they promote isolating people in poverty from their family and friends. While the company who makes these classes website claims that they saw an uplift of 42% in employment outcomes from job seekers from all age groups. Well, when the choice is between condescending them to such a degree that they actually end up committing suicide, or getting into a job that may break their body at some point with terrible work conditions, but at least that'll happen sometime down the road and won't be an immediate consequence, then the choices seem a little clearer, don't they? There was surprisingly little mention of how people on Centrelink are earning so little. Even the OECD says JobSeeker has fallen to the point where questions could be asked about its effectiveness in providing sufficient support for those experiencing a job loss or enabling someone to look for a suitable job. Calling Centrelink help is a bigger joke than the time that the Nobel Prize Committee gave Henry Kissinger a Peace Prize as a prank. Now, regarding the original Robodebt crime, the Albanese government has agreed, or rather, agreed in principle to all of the 56 recommendations of the Robodebt Royal Commission. Ah, in principle. Excellent. So things will definitely get done? Right? Not like this government to make promises and then completely walk them back once they're in power / in the clear of public scrutiny. And they've always spoken up in defense of welfare recipients, saying the rate should be lifted, like here, when they were in opposition.
The government's taking a big political bet with this. You saw how freaked out they were at the start of the pandemic at the idea that middle-class Australia might actually discover what it's like to live on $40 a day. I mean, it's all right for people in Labor electorates, isn't it? And, you know, a few buried in National Party electorates in the country because they got no one else to vote for. That's all right. Couldn't have middle-class Australia trying to live on $40 a day. Better give them a coronavirus supplement. So we're taking a bet, aren't we, government, that everything will be back to normal when you make these cuts in March. The government's rationale is, well, twofold. They have two talking points on this. We can't afford it, or it's a disincentive to work. Well, can't afford it. What a load of rubbish. You're running up $1.7 trillion of debt. Budgets are about choices and priorities. $4,000 an hour to fly Matthias Cormann around Europe in a luxury government jet. Government subsidies for Clive Palmer's jets. Government subsidies for JobKeeper, so executives can pay themselves bonuses from the companies reaping millions in JobKeeper. $30 million for a piece of land worth $3 million. Tax cuts. I mean, tax cuts have a place, but we in this House, when the government's tax cuts are fully implemented, get $16,000 a year. I did the math on that. That's $43 a day. Our tax cut that this government has passed as its priority, our tax cut is bigger per day than the government says someone on Newstart has to live on. That's a disgrace. That says everything you need to know about this government's priorities. So don't believe their marketing spin, the country can't afford to keep people out of poverty. It's a matter of choices.
And here, when they got into power.
You can't repair all of the damage or do everything that you want to do immediately. You'll be fiscally responsible.
We need to lift income support payments above the poverty line.
We love a good government in principle, guys. In principle. But they're out there fighting the fight for us, right? They're fighting the good fight for all the things that we need. Like, for example, saying the victims of Robodebt would not have justice until the now opposition leader Peter Dutton apologised for the sins of his predecessor. Now that's justice. Wait. What? An apology? An apology? An apology isn't going to pay for people's trauma. An apology isn't going to bring back the people who committed suicide to life. An apology isn't even going to be listened to, because the last thing that we want is to have to carve time out of our busy day between maybe working two jobs or struggling to feed our children or trying to budget enough money to survive while our rent increasingly goes up, the cost of basic food rises, our bills go up, to listen to Peter Dutton speak on anything. Seems the only thing not going up these days is the Centrelink rate. But yeah, sure, an apology, that'll make it all better. This isn't your usual government matter. We don't get an apology and brush it off under the rug of history. No, it doesn't work like that. If there's one thing that I don't need to raise along with my cost of living, it's the amount of symbolic gestures that the government makes after just absolutely devastating the population. You can put your apology with your thoughts and prayers in a big box of useless gestures, and when we can't turn our heater on in the winter, we'll open up this big box of hot air in order to stay warm. I'm going to note this, and I will come back to it when they fail us. Two things that we are never going to see. Recommendation 18.2. Reinstate the limitation of 6 years on debt recovery. The Commonwealth should repeal S1234B of the Social Security Act and reinstate the effective limitation period of 6 years for the bringing of proceedings to recover debts under Part 5.2 of the Act formerly contained in S1232 and S1236 and of that Act before the repeal of the relevant subsections by the Budget Savings Omnibus Act No. 55, 2016. There's no reason that current and former Social Security recipients should be on any different footing from other debtors. So that's one. And this. Now, while this is not a formal recommendation, People's champion Catherine Holmes wrote that a better use of the money would be to lift the rate at which Social Security benefits are paid to help recipients achieve some semblance of the security element of that term. Because with financial security comes the dignity to which Social Security recipients are entitled and to which the scheme was so damaging. Sentiment backed up by the report that Labor put together that recommended raising the rate above poverty levels. And the Workforce Australia Employment Services Committee also handed down its final report, making 75 further recommendations to fix a system it says actually hurts job seekers and employers alike. So now we have 131 recommendations, 132 if you count the unofficial one to raise the rate, which can be accepted in principle and swiftly ignored. But they have accepted them in principle. And that's the important thing, in principle. The government is panicking a little bit and is quickly commissioning a new study to figure out ways to bully Centrelink recipients, assuming that they remove mutual obligations. Until then, an apology will have to suffice. As long as an apology manifests and they accept in principle they could be doing a better job, then they'll never need to actually improve. And sure, Bill Shorten came out vowing to rehumanise Services Australia in response to human debt. Presumably, one of its first moves will be to rebrand Services Australia back to the Department of Human Services, literally putting the human back into the services. That's all we need, right? That's symbolism, baby! Come on! But at the same time, no public servants are going to be sacked over robo-debt. How can you reasonably hold people accountable when they have no fear of punishment? Right now, Centrelink recipients are getting punished more than the people who instigated the literal crimes against them. If he really wants to humanize this service, it needs to understand some bare bones ideas. These are people, not money-hungry scavengers. Dwarves with gold fever, like a fantasy novel. These are people who need help. And maybe sometimes mutual obligations is something that can be put aside rather than used as a club to beat them over the head until they get in line. Especially during periods of extreme heat or wild weather. The committee for the report, with the 75 recommendations, heard evidence that job seekers subject to mutual obligations actually took longer to find work than those who weren't. How could that be, you ask? Easy, when things like a 27-year-old on JobSeeker had to attend a mutual obligation meeting in February this year, or her payments would be cut off. Pretty normal, sounds like, you would say. Well, on her trip home, she missed the bus and was forced to stand for 30 minutes in the sun. Not just any sun, the Australian sun. And not just any Australian sun, the Perth sun. In summer, it was 34 degrees at the end of a heat wave. So she got heat stroke, which I will say is definitely a detriment to being able to look for work. Heading into the summer that we are, with record temperatures and climate change as it is, I'm just waiting for Centrelink to tell a recipient that they don't care if the roads are literally melting and they'll catch on fire if they leave their house. They have mutual obligations, and that means that they are obliged to do their part. This isn't a charity, you know. You have your obligations. Even if you burn to death, you better get your fiery skeleton up off the ground and drag it into the office using the dark art of necromancy. Nothing will stop our meeting from happening, you hear me? Nothing! So I'll see you at 3:30 then? Okay. And finally, it is Existential Australia News! Guys! It's been a bit of an episode, hey? Woo! I think we need a bit of a light one to end it. We've been looking at climate change, refugees, and systemic failures. Sort of like the Australian version of the Wizard of Oz, you know, but like the actual Wizard of Oz. Climate change, refugees, and systemic failures. Oh my! Climate change, refugees, and systemic failures. Oh my! Climate change, refugees, and systemic failures. Oh my! Wouldn't it be just easier if Australia didn't exist? I mean, that'd solve a lot of these problems, right? Well, you're in luck, guys, because according to Bing, that's right, Bing, Australia doesn't exist. And frankly, that is a real relief. Just take a moment to enjoy that Australia doesn't exist. I was worried that this place called Australia, which I keep talking shit about, actually existed. Can you imagine? If such a place existed, surely it'd need to be invaded by America or something. It is a major desert with the largest access to fossil fuels, whose government is out of control and the native people aren't white. Sounds like all of the right ingredients for an American invasion. So several very real Australian users on Blue Sky and Mastodon reported that when they search for "Does Australia exist?" on Bing, it will come back with an emphatic "No!" written in a text box before the link results. All of these articles seem to skip over the reason these people are Googling, does Australia exist in the first place? Kind of feels like they were planning their invasion, doing some reconnaissance. Who knows? Who knows? But the results were appearing in regular Bing searches rather than the conversational searches Microsoft had integrated with its large language model artificial intelligence. Searches using Microsoft's AI confirm the existence of Australia. Damn. Here we see Bing just really leaning into that flat earth conspiracy theory that circulated the internet a few years back and pops up every so often, presumably because someone uses Bing as their main search engine in order to escape from Google tracking all of their information, right? That's got to be the main reason. And that is a smart play by Bing. Every app, every website needs a purpose or it'll be lost, right? This is why nobody speaks Esperanto. It has no purpose in life. It exists, but nobody needs it. There is no living culture around it. Things need purpose. This is why Telegram, 4chan, and eventually 8chan all turned like hard into the right wing. Lefties had taken over everything else, made it woke and turned it into like a gay producing rainbow factory, or infected it with the idea of caring for other humans or whatever bullshit it is that the lefties care about this week. So Bing must have been slowly tilting into becoming the conspiracy theorist's choice just on the sly. Because you need purpose, guys. You gotta have purpose in life. It is particularly interesting given that it is the search engine made by Microsoft, the conspiracy theorist's mecca for anger. But maybe all those microchips made them turn to Bing without realizing it. The chips in their brain rearrange the signals so that they can't even notice the Microsoft logos in the corner. I think we've broken this thing wide open. You know, this used to be a fun conspiracy, dating all the way back to 2006, a much simpler time when Pirates of the Caribbean was only two films and Brokeback Mountain made men feel feelings for gay cowboys. When a user on a Flat Earth Society forum reportedly claimed everything about Australia was made up and everyone who claimed to be Australian were secret government agents. Just mwah, beautiful stuff. Eventually, we turn into being computer generated or actors. So surprisingly prescient predictions from the society that can't even accept that science on round earths was settled in the 5th century. And when you fly to Australia, they claim you're actually being taken to different islands near South America. You know, those islands where you can see the famous South American creature, the kangaroo. Allegedly, Australia is just a cover-up, as Britain never actually took their criminals there. They just dumped them all in the sea. And I wish this was a giant acting job. I really do. Do you genuinely think any country has that much money that they're willing to spend on arts funding? Do you genuinely? You don't seem to know much about the arts, do you? There is only one aspect of this that lines up. We do give a stupid amount of our arts money to overseas productions. We gave money to Guns N' Roses to tour here. Guns N' Roses has touring money that they didn't need to be subsidized with. $1.35 million was sent to Guns N' Roses. So, I don't know. Maybe there are no Australian artists, which means there's no Australian art, which means there's no Australian actors. So how can this conspiracy exist? If Australia is considered a large-scale BBC production, then maybe the ABC, if such a place were even to exist, will scoop it up and play it on ABC iView. That could be a nice change. But, guys, if such a country had this kind of arts budget and they were just willing to throw it around, I'd be happy to move. Very happy to move. I'd learn an accent, I'd do a citizenship test, learn all the in-jokes, whatever it takes to get that precious arts funding for my one-man show, pretending that I moved here from Australia. That's the end of the episode, guys. Thanks so much for hanging out and coming all the way to the end of the episode. If you did enjoy it, I really appreciate it. If you could do all the things, whatever platform you're on. Is it like, is it share, is it thumbs up? I don't know, wherever you're watching this, interact with it somehow. If you've enjoyed it and you think you've got a friend who might enjoy it, feel free to share it with them. I'd really appreciate that. I think the best way to support the show, as always, remains coming to the live show. So remember, I'll be in Rockingham, I'll be in Perth, I'll be in Adelaide, I'll be in Melbourne for the Comedy Festival, and I'll be going around a couple of places during the year. If you want to support us but can't come to the shows and for some reason don't want to interact with the video, that's fine. You can join up with our Patreon. It's patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. Join one of the tiers there and you get a bonus story every episode. So we've got our bonus story covered in today and I think you're going to like it. So go and check that out. Sign up with Patreon and you get some extra material for this podcast. Thanks so much. Look after yourselves. Goodbye.